Chapter 17, The Environmental Psychology of Personal Space, Territory Crowding and Related Ideas. Environmental psychology is the study of the environment in relation to human behavior. There are many environmental factors that can affect the way people think, act and interact with others. Many of these factors are of a physical nature, such as the architectural layout of rooms, temperature, humidity, noise levels, lighting, etc. However, many of the environmental factors are simply other human beings. This chapter does not deal with the physical entities. It focuses on the environmental impact that results from having other people in the environment. Thus, personal space, territory, high social density and crowding are discussed in this chapter, under the headings that follow. Personal space and territory. There are two basic concepts that relate to human behavior and space. One is personal space and the other is territory. Personal space is a concept that relates to the way people behave toward others in relation to the distance they maintain in interpersonal interactions, which can range from 0 to more than 25 feet. Territory relates to the claim a person has to a specific area, such as a seat, a room, a house, etc. These concepts are discussed in more detail under the remaining subheadings of this chapter. Personal space. Individuals have a tendency to try to optimize their physical proximity to others. The optimized proximity distance depends on the circumstances. That is, people will move closer or farther away to reach the optimum distance for the specific set of circumstances they are faced with. There are four general distances. Zones defined by anthropologist Edward Hall 1966 for interpersonal interaction, which are intimate distance, personal distance, social distance and public distance. In addition, I am defining a fifth spatial zone that is relevant for modern electronic communications, which I am calling electronic distance. These five interpersonal zones are discussed in the following eight paragraphs. Intimate distance is from 0 to approximately 18 inches. Examples of this type of distance are seen with a mother and her infant, between lovers, when children are playing games that involve physical contact, and in various types of aggressive behavior involving physical contact, such as wrestling. Usually, people who interact in this spatial zone have a primary relationship with each other. That is, very often they are family members, lovers or close friends who are playing. When people engage others in this spatial zone, they are often, but not always, expressing some type of affection or aggression. In some cases the affection can be sexually related, and in some cases the aggression can be of a playful nature. Personal distance is from 18 inches to 4 feet. This is the distance people generally use for friendly conversations. Friends and acquaintances often maintain this distance. Relatives also often communicate in this spatial zone. Social distance is from 4 to 7 feet. This zone perhaps should be named the business distance. That is, this is the distance used in formal business discussions and similar meetings. Often, there is a desk between the people involved in this type of interaction, which serves to define the distance. People who interact in this zone usually have a business relationship with each other. Public distance is the zone from 12 to 25 feet. This is a spatial zone used in classrooms and similar lecture-oriented situations. The physical arrangement of the lecture hall can serve to define the distance between the speaker and the audience. The relationship between the people who engage in this zone is generally a secondary relationship, such as a teacher and her students. Most of us did much of our formal learning in this spatial zone. However, public distance is certainly not limited to the classroom. People interact in this zone in any situation where there is a lecturer in an area the size of a classroom. The people interacting in this zone may or may not know each other. For example, teachers and students interacting in this zone may know each other, but people attending a one-time lecture will probably not have any relationship with each other. Electronic distance is the distance that is maintained in situations where there is a need for a device to communicate. The device is usually electronic in nature, which is the reason for the terminology electronic distance. This distance can range from 25 feet to many thousands of miles. The shorter distances in this range are found in large lecture halls where amplifying equipment is needed to communicate with an audience. Longer distances, in the range of many miles or even many thousands of miles, are seen with television, radio, telephone, and communications by computer. Electronic distance can involve mass communication, which is primarily a one-way communications process, such as with television or radio broadcasts. Electronic distance can also be personal, as happens with one-to-one communications with telephones and one-to-one communications with computers. With mass communications, the people generally do not know each other, but with telephone and computer they may have a close primary or secondary relationship with each other. This is probably more the case with the telephone than with the computer. In modern times, electronic distance has become a common occurrence, and it appears to be becoming more popular as time proceeds. Electronic distance may be replacing some of the other zones of interaction. This was first apparent with radio and television, where people started to focus on performers on the radio or television set. This was done at the expense of interactions in closer spatial zones with people in their own physical environment. That is, radio and television competes with closer interactions and probably reduces interactions that take place at closer spatial zones. In addition, it is often more convenient to communicate by telephone or computer. Electronic distance eliminates all the problems of traveling. The telephone and computer can even eliminate the need to attend work or school in person in some situations. The individual can show up electronically. The increased use of electronic distance may be highly functional in many cases, but it may also be quite dysfunctional under some conditions. The closer spatial zones of interaction, which might be replaced by electronic distance, offer certain psychological and social advantages over electronic distance. The closer spatial zones may be more psychologically stimulating and challenging than electronic distance, which might make people feel and function better in the long run. People who are interacting in the closer spatial zones must learn to deal with their own and the emotional responses and needs of others. With electronic distance, the above is usually not very important, because there is no face-to-face contact, and the duration of interaction is likely to be more limited. This might in fact be an advantage under certain conditions, but in the long run it might be somewhat dysfunctional. It eliminates the need to develop a high level of social skills, awareness and sensitivity to other human beings that are generally required with the other spatial zones. In general, the socialization process, the learning of norms, values, appropriate behavior and social skills, which begin from early childhood and continues throughout life, happen in the closer spatial zones. When people interact in the closer spatial zones, they tend to supervise the behavior of each other and offer corrective feedback. An obvious example is seen when parents are interacting with an image on the television set instead of interacting with their children. This can result in the children receiving less than adequate supervision and guidance unless there is an alternative individual to provide the supervisory function. A less obvious example are individuals who attend work or school electronically. Such individuals perhaps can often be supervised by the material that is transmitted by the computer, but there is still less supervision than in a regular job situation. This may be a serious problem for some individuals, especially those who have less ability to discipline themselves and their supervisors. Another advantage to the closer spatial zones is it is relatively easy to meet new people, which may happen in a totally unplanned way. This results in the development of many different types of acquaintanceships and friendships, which may be helpful in school, the business world, and in the mate selection process. This process of meeting people and getting to know them is much less likely to happen through electronic interactions. Of course, some people do meet through telephone communication services and through computer communications, but this generally only works for individuals who are intentionally seeking another individual, usually for a potential mate. Of course, there are many true advantages to electronic distance, and some of these advantages were implied above. A few are as follows. Electronic distance saves time, especially in relation to the time that would be needed for traveling to see an individual in person. Electronic distance reduces the difficulties of relating to people. Prejudice, physical looks, and inappropriate body language are not factors in electronic communications that do not transmit images. Electronic distance allows one-way communication simultaneously with a large number of people, such as with television and radio broadcasts. Electronic communications makes it easy to listen to top experts and famous people through television and radio broadcasts. Territory. What is territory? Territory is an area that an individual permanently or temporarily claims as theirs. The claim can involve verbal statement, various territory markers, and behavior indicating possession of the space. In Taylor's social psychology, there are three major types of territories listed, which are primary, secondary, and public. The three categories of territory are discussed in the following paragraphs. Primary territory is space that is essentially owned or leased and utilized by an individual or a group. This space is private and is not open to the public. Examples are an apartment, a house, a private office, etc. An important distinguishing component of primary territory is as follows. The claim an individual has to such territory is reinforced by formal rules and norms. Violation of such rules can result in imprisonment. Secondary territory is space that is semi-public in nature and is shared by specific individuals. Examples are the seats in a classroom. Students more or less tend to use the same seat each time they attend a lecture held in a specific classroom. They make an informal claim to the territory, the seat, by using it regularly. That is, they essentially make a territory claim for the seat at a specific time each week. However, they do not have any formal rights to the claim. If another student gets to class early and wants to take the seat, he or she may do so according to formal rules. But such a student might be violating the informal norms of the group. Such violations might result in minimal informal penalties, such as dirty looks and/or some critical verbal responses. Public territory is a public area where the general public has access. Examples are a park, the beach, the waiting area in a bus station, areas in the public library, etc. Individuals in this type of territory may make a temporary claim for a specific section of it. This is done by placing the body and/or various items owned by the individual, which serve as territory markers on the space. For example, an individual may make a territory claim on a library table by placing his or her books on the table. Individuals may also reserve a seat, while it is unoccupied for a short time interval, by placing their coat on the seat to indicate that it is claimed territory. There are no formal or informal rules or norms that protect a claim once the individual leaves and removes his or her territory markers. Unlike the secondary territory, discussed in the previous paragraph, the individual cannot claim the space at a specific time every week. That is, there are no norms or rules protecting the territory after the individual removes his or her belongings and leaves. Crowding and related ideas. What is crowding, including its various verb forms? The answer to this question appears obvious. However, the correct answer, from the perspective of social psychology, is not obvious. Before the word crowding and its various verb forms are defined, it is necessary to define social density. Social density is the number of people that occupy a specific area. It can be represented in terms of the number of people per unit area, such as one of the following: 3 people per square meter, 70 people per acre, 100,000 people per square mile. The common definition of a crowded space is an area that has a high or very high social density, but that is not the correct definition from the perspective of the social psychologist. The definition provided in Taylor's social psychology is as follows. Crowding refers to the psychological state of discomfort and stress associated with wanting more space than is available. That is, crowding is an adverse emotional response to the perception of high social density. The actual density may or may not be high, but the individual as perceives the density is high and feels uncomfortable as a result. There might be situations where an individual feels comfortable in a space that has a very high social density. Such an individual is not experiencing crowding. That is, he or she will not feel crowded according to the definition of the social psychologist. Of course, the individual would almost certainly be aware of the very high social density, but it certainly does not follow that discomfort should result. The individual might feel very comfortable in a high social density situation. This can be especially true when the high concentration of people are associated in the individual's mind in very positive terms, such as may happen in a political or religious movement. Crowding might be more likely to be experienced if the high concentration of people evokes negative associations in the individual's mind. For example, a conservative individual walking down the street, who unintentionally encounters a large number of liberal and radical protesters, might feel crowded. However, most of the liberal and radical protesters might feel invigorated by the large turnout of political protesters, and most, if not all, will not feel crowded. In Taylor's social psychology, the idea of loss of control is discussed in relation to crowding. When an individual feels that he or she has lost control as a result of high social density, he or she is likely to feel crowded. There were some experiments conducted by Sherrod in 1974 that provided some support for the above. Another explanation of the sensation of crowding from Taylor's social psychology relates to the personality of the individual. Some people like or have a need for high degrees of stimulation. They may prefer the stereo on loud while they are doing homework. They may prefer exciting activities. According to the theory, these people would not mind high social densities. They would find it pleasantly stimulating. However, the opposite personality type, who has little need for high degrees of stimulation from the environment, will not like high-density social environments. Such an individual will feel uncomfortably stimulated. Thus, they will feel crowded under such conditions. It should be kept in mind that extremely high social densities can have an adverse physiological effect as a result of forces on the body. Such forces can range from mild impacts resulting in minimum physiological consequences, to severe forces that can result in serious physiological damage, which can result in death. We all occasionally hear about people getting trampled to death in extremely crowded environments. In such cases, the concept of crowding is not just a psychological state of mind. Of course, such extreme conditions are quite rare, but when the social density reaches fairly high levels, the fear of adverse physiological consequences can be a cause of feeling crowded. Such fears may be set off from associations obtained from news reports about people getting trampled to death in crowds.